We say good morning and welcome into our leadoff batter this morning, Assemblywoman Claudia Tenney. Good morning to you. Claudia, how are you?
Good morning. You know, I'm lefty.
Are you a lefty?
Yeah, so when I'm batting, you know, left-handed.
Oh, I thought you meant you were actually, you were maybe a little bit on the left.
No, I'm a left-handed. That means I'm in my right brain, right?
Well, actually, I'm left-handed, too. So,
what
are the chances that you would actually have two lefties back-to-back on the show here today?
Creative.
They say it's a higher IQ, an indication of a higher IQ. That obviously slipped past me. That didn't hold true for me. Now, actually, Claudia is in today to talk about recent developments in the Supreme Court case between the Oneidas and the Sherrill case. And I actually had just a couple of questions for you, but I see you brought in a stack of papers, probably, I don't know, about eight inches thick.
No, I didn't bring that much in with me.
So here's the deal.
I know it. I just had some stuff sitting on the desk, so I grabbed them.
Okay. What we wanted to talk about today, I'm trying to get the how come on this. The Oneidas have waived their immunity in the case between them and Sherrill. What can you kind of give us in layman's terms exactly what that means and why they would do such a thing?
Okay, this case was the foreclosure case, just so everybody knows. And Sherrill determined that their land was taxable, so the counties moved in to foreclose. Right. On the land to either foreclose or pay your taxes, one or the other.
At which point the Oneidas claimed...
So we ended up in court, and then Judge Hurd, as he always does, you know, ruled that we can't, you know, the land, he ruled in a certain way that was reversed in Sherrill. He still goes back to the same cases and the same case law that was already reversed in Sherrill. The Sherrill case, meaning the 2005 case that had to do with the land. So then it went to the Second Circuit, and the Second Circuit wanted, because the conundrum was, gee, the property's taxable, but the second Judge Hurd ruled, oh, it's taxable, but you can't foreclose.
So in essence, then there's no way to enforce that taxability.
How do you enforce the taxability? Sure. So that's because the land status hasn't been determined. So the Second Circuit decided, well, we don't know what to do because we don't know if they have sovereign immunity, if they're a sovereign nation, we need that to be determined. And so one of the judges said, you know, I wish the Supreme Court would take this case and help us decide this issue. So the Supreme Court granted certiorari, which means they're going to take the case. The parties all submitted their briefs, and the case was set to be heard before the Supreme Court for oral argument on February 23rd.
Right.
Well, at the 11th hour, after the briefs were filed, the new attorney for the Oneida Indian Nation, a guy named Seth Waxman, who I haven't seen on any of the papers in all the cases before, so he's some new person, decided to waive, quote-unquote, the sovereign immunity that they had claimed, which is one of the two issues to be decided by the court. The main question is if they have any, what really is sovereignty?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, do they have any reservation for purposes of gambling and that type of thing? Is there anything left that would allow them to be non-taxable? So those are the two issues to be decided by the court. So by waiving their sovereign immunity, their claim, I say claimed sovereign immunity because I don't believe that they have sovereign immunity in the true sense like, say, Canada or Mexico does, and neither do any of the cases support that. That's just something they kind of use like a faucet. They say, oh, we're sovereign here. Oh, we're not sovereign there. We're sovereign here. You don't. If you value sovereign immunity, you're not going to waive it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a tactic to try to waive it to delay. Now the court has sent this case back to the Second Circuit to re-look at those issues without having to worry about, you know, whether or not they have sovereign immunity. So they're going to go back and re-look, I really think, to basically look at all the same issues they looked at before without a cloud of sovereign immunity. And really what it does in the end is even if, regardless of who wins the next Second Circuit decision, which we're going to go through a whole new briefing period and another whole long period of time.
Yeah, do we know how long period of time is?
I'd say at least 9 months.
Okay.
Just based on their usual timing. You know, usually you get 9 months, unless they do some kind of expedited procedure. So they go back to the court rehears evidence, and now the problem is, it was a tough situation. The Oneidas had to make a decision. We will have a decision out of the Supreme. If they didn't try to figure out a way to, I was surprised. Actually, truthfully, let's go back. I was surprised the Supreme Court allowed this gimmick to take place. It's really just gamesmanship.
Mm-hmm.
It really was kind of a funny. They were just trying to eliminate it. One of the biggest things is none of the Indians across the country want the Supreme Court to make a decisive ruling on what sovereign immunity is, tribal sovereignty.
Is that because they fear that the decision won't be in their favor?
Absolutely.
And more specifically, the Oneidas?
It's not going to be in their favor, and that's why the Supreme Court ultimately wants to take this decision up. I don't believe it's going to be in their favor. I find it. There's just no way under the Constitution that they can support the types of sovereignty that the Indians are describing, especially the Oneidas, who have much less status in terms of their independence and sovereignty than, say, some of the Western states who are actually on federal land. I mean, don't forget, Indians are governed by Congress, now under the federal government. They are considered dependent domestics. They're like wards of the federal government. They are not a separate nation. They're not Canada. They have land that's taken care of them. They have social services. They have all the other rights. They are citizens like we are. Every Indian in the state of New York is a federal citizen, you know, citizen of the United States, as long as they have natural citizenship like you or me. If they're residents of the state and they have any Indian blood, I mean, that's a whole other issue. You can talk about why we have racist determinations about people's status. That's a 14th Amendment issue. But they are all subject to a federal statute actually states, section, if anyone wants to look it up, it's 25 U.S.C. section 232 and section 233 govern it just states that all civil and criminal jurisdiction, you know, Indians are all subject to that, regardless of whether you're 1/8, 1/2, 100%. So actually what it is, though, it's a protection, too. You're protected by our constitution, our state constitution. So all this, oh, they're a separate country stuff is crazy.
Okay.
They're not a separate country sitting up there.
Okay, well, and back to the sovereign immunity issue.
Right.
They've waived it. Is it gone for good now, or is this something once court decisions are made and it benefits them again, are they going to go back and say, well, actually, we actually do have sovereign
immunity.
From what
they claim, they're only going to waive their sovereign immunity in foreclosure cases. So how can you pick and choose whether you have sovereign immunity?
Well, yeah, I would think you are or you aren't.
If I'm, if you're the state of New York or the federal government, they have certain sovereign rights, sovereign immunity rights from suit, from different kinds of things. You can't just decide, well, this type of case I am and this one I'm not. I mean, it's interesting that they feel it's okay to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, they can justify it that way. So my argument is, okay, so if you're going to waive your sovereign immunity in foreclosure cases and start either paying taxes you owe with interest and everything else, like every other taxpayer would, or let us start picking up the properties and reselling them to recover the money lost.
How does the Supreme Court not see through this? They see that the court date is coming, it's soon, and then all of a sudden the Oneidas say, okay, we waive our immunity. How do they then drop the case? I don't understand that.
I know. I've had a couple of thoughts on it because I thought, well, how can they do this? They know it's just a blatant gimmick to do this because they know that they do not want that issue of sovereignty to decide by June because they want to buy time. And in the end, we're all going to be back in the Supreme Court to decide these same issues. It's just going to be there. My thing is, I thought, why would they do that? And I started thinking through, possibly they want to go back and have a solid, evidentiary, body of evidence coming from the Second Circuit so that when they go to readdress these issues, they have that has already been done and they can rule on something specifically as opposed to creating kind of new law in that way. It's the only thing I can come up with because it's really not the function of the Supreme Court to go through exhaustive evidentiary. And that's what evidentiary findings, which is what they've asked the Second Circuit to do. Go back. Let's take some more evidence. Let's determine these issues. And maybe they felt that they needed more information beyond just the briefs that were submitted to the Supreme Court. One of the things that was inaccurate, I noticed in the Observer Dispatch, it said that the attorney's fees were awarded to the county. So actually, they didn't award attorney's fees, but they did award costs, which are very expensive in a federal case because you have a record, which is huge, thousands of papers and pages that have to be delivered to all these various parties. So the counties did at least get the cost back because this was at least deemed by the court as sort of a last-minute, unfairness, I think. That's why I don't know why they rewarded it. That's the only thing I can say. Let's get to these issues anyway because we're going to get to them. You know, they do have that right to do it, but maybe they perceived it as too political to jump to the gun on it. I don't know.
All right. Goes back to the Second Circuit. So we're looking at about 9 months,
and it
just continues to drag on.
It'll get to the Supreme Court again. I'm going to guess Supreme Court in 18 months, hopefully.
Okay. Well, that certainly does seem to be the MO, is just to keep it rolling, just keep that ball rolling. Let's talk about specifically about you. And, you're 2 weeks in now. How are things going in the Assembly?
Well, it's been in many ways just like it was before. So I haven't seen any dramatic changes in the Assembly. Change comes hard to them because if you look at New York State government over the past, say, 15 years, there's only one thing that hasn't changed, and that's the makeup of the State Assembly and its Speaker. So you go back, you've had Democratic governor, Republican governor. You've had Democratic Senate, Republican Senate. The only thing that hasn't changed is the assembly, and it's Shelley Silver's the speaker. Last week, we came in for our first day, and we basically chose our leaders. You know, we gaveled in for that. We gaveled in for, you know, appointing the clerk and the rules of the assembly, which, of course, I voted against. And then this week, all we did was gavel in for introductions.
Mm.
And so we all went down there all the way for introductions, and we had no bills because the assembly majority has not appointed their chairman of the committee. So until something comes out of committee, we can't vote on anything. So we went all the way down there because they haven't decided what to do with the committees. And part of this is because now we have 17 new Republicans. So committees are based on the percentage of the number in the assembly. So we have a larger percentage. The Republicans now, the minority, have a larger percentage. So they have to figure out how they're going to add us to different committees to make it, you know, the balance and the percentages correct. I think that's part of what it is. But hopefully we'll really get down to some serious bills next week.
Can I ask two very silly questions?
Sure.
That really don't have that much to do with it, but it will give people
ask
an idea.
Ask because everybody asks me these questions.
Okay. It will give listeners some kind of idea of, you know, what you go through as an assemblywoman. How long is the drive from where you live to Albany?
An hour and a half.
Okay, and how is the parking when you get there? Is there assembly parking? Do you have a parking? Or do you have?
You must have heard this when I
said
it.
No, I didn't. Honestly, I didn't because
when I worked before in the assembly, 6 years I didn't have a parking space, so I spent a lot of time circling around trying to find parking, just like everybody else. And so this year, you actually get a parking space as a member of the assembly, so that's nice.
Oh, okay.
So I just drive into the garage and get a space. And actually, my space isn't too bad. It's by the elevator. Although every time I've been there this last 2 weeks, the elevator's been broken. So I'm walking in these dark, cold parking garages trying to get back up to the Capitol. But that's all right. I'm happy to have a parking space because it is sometimes very difficult, especially on a Tuesday, which is a lobby day, mm-hmm. to try to find a parking space.
Well,
or
I'm
you
sure.
feed a meter.
Well, and especially this time of year to have to walk any further than you have to. I'm going to ask you a question about, this is about Congress, and you might be able to speak to it, you might not, but I was listening to the national news this morning, and this struck me as funny, that they're voting on a resolution to condemn the shootings in Tucson that happened this past weekend. Shouldn't that just be, why do they have to vote to condemn that?
They
why
don't.
Do they have to
I mean,
have
that's
a resolution?
That's another one of those. That's they do it in the assembly, too.
Okay.
They take votes. They take resolutions. They waste valuable time on the floor.
Yeah, to me, seems like that's just a waste.
To pontificate about certain issues, about you know, big issues that have affected, you know, last year they did a whole thing. And granted, I don't – all of the tragedies that happen in this world from, you know, we honored a year ago the earthquake in Haiti, which was a horrific 200,000 people died. Mm-hmm. That – is terrible, and we can honor that everywhere else. We don't have to use valuable time on the floor to honor that. And they do that in the assembly, and that you don't need a resolution to condemn it. Obviously, we all condemn it, but that's one of those things that they want to show. It's like a show thing.
So there's no legal standard
no.
at all. There's no reason that
needs
to be done.
What is the Congress? That's not going to affect the criminal trial of this guy.
No, exactly.
I mean, it's evidence. Oh, look, the U.S. Congress took valuable taxpayer time and talked about. You know, I'm sure many of them think it's ridiculous, but it's one of those things that there's pressure to make it look like they're doing the right thing. And, you know, I like to say we're going to do the work, not make it look like we're doing the work.
Right, exactly.
So, it's a little frustrating. I'm dying to vote on some bills, but we can't get anything.
That will come soon enough, trust me. I'm sure you'll have plenty to vote on.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're going to, here's what they do, which is also frustrating because I've worked there for so many years. We have all this time now to really absorb some of the bills, reintroduce bills that didn't make it before that you know, really should be passed or relooked at. Most of it gets done, you're jamming them all in just before the budget is passed. And then once the budget is passed, they sort of linger on, and then you jam them all in June because the session ends in June. And it's like, well, why we have all this time. Let's get it done now.
Sure, absolutely.
Instead of getting 1,000 bills going through the House in June, and you're up until 4 o'clock in the morning trying to read them and make sense of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, there apparently is a great book about how the New York State government, it's called The Sausage Factory.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about how I heard it. They were talking about it in Albany the other day, and I thought that sounds like a good description of, you know, how laws are made. Yeah,
exactly.
They say you don't want to see how a sausage made. Right?
It's State Assemblywoman Claudia Tenney. Did we miss anything this morning, Claudia?
Oh, yeah. I have lots of stuff you want to talk about. I'm just kidding.
Well, we'll save that for the next interview.
Sure.
I figure probably about a month away. And safe travels to you when you go back to Albany, and hopefully you'll get some bills to vote on here pretty quick.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you so much.